Are you ready to leave your corporate job behind and be your own boss? Have you ever dreamed of owning a business? Do you have $50,000 or more sitting around in a 401k? If you answered yes, it's time to invest in yourself by buying or starting a business or franchise. IRS code allows you to use money in a 401k to invest in a business with absolutely no penalties or taxes. At Guidant Financial, we've helped more than 11,000 entrepreneurs invest $3 billion in retirement assets into the small businesses and franchises of their dreams. So if you've got $50,000 or more in a 401k and you're looking for a way to start a business, call Guidant Financial now for free information and to learn more. Operators are standing by for your call. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. That's 800-570-6630.
From the campus of Yale University, this is Business Talk with Jim Campbell, nationally syndicated across the country on the Biz Talk Radio Network and coming to you from our flagship stations, Yale Radio WYBC and 1490 AM WGCH Greenwich. All talk and all business, 60 minutes of radio with leading figures from the world of business along with the business of politics and sports. How a penniless dropout became the greatest steelmaker in history, the quiet financial genius of Kirk Kerkorian. That's tonight on Business Talk with Jim Campbell. William Rempel is a veteran investigative reporter with 36 years' experience at the Los Angeles Times. His reporting triggered government investigations, exposed White House and Pentagon scandals, prompted reforms of state courts, consumer protection laws. He's the author of At the Devil's Table, The Untold Story of the Insider Who Brought Down the Cali Cartel. He was a consultant on the Netflix series Narcos. He's produced groundbreaking reports on Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda that were published before the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001, and provided extensive coverage of supertanker safety flaws, again, before the 1989 Exxon Valdez disaster. And he's got a new book, The Gambler, How Penniless Dropout Kirk Kerkorian Became the Greatest Dealmaker in Capitalist History. That's a mouthful. Welcome, Bill.
Thanks.
Great career you've had. Now, this is a tremendous rags-to-riches story, an American dream with an unknown Armenian. I want to start off, I just got this great sense of paradox. You have this shy guy who went Hollywood, this guy who was a builder who continually traded properties. He was known as a builder in Vegas, a liquidator in Hollywood. How did you get your arms around who Kirk Kerkorian is?
Well, he's a man of many stories and many sides, and that was part of the fascination. A man of contradictions, no education, and yet he schooled some of the greatest minds in business. So everything I learned about him was a surprise. There was so many things. And, of course, his penchant for privacy, the way he kept out of the public eye, avoided all the trappings of celebrity for most of his life, and that added to the mystery.
He didn't really care about money, though, as much as you would think, right?
Well, that's right. He considered the risk the thing that got him going in the morning. You know, he loved risk. He was a gambler. He was a gambler at the tables in Vegas, and he was a gambler in business. And he always talked about how the risk was the great thrill ride.
Did you unmask something that surprised you the most, or you said there's just everything seemed to surprise you?
Well, that's the thing. There's so many surprises. I mean, starting with the degree of poverty from which he grew in the first place. His family, his father was, and the family were evicted from the ranch when he was 5-6 years old, and that's about as far from the Forbes list that you're going to get. And then as he grew up, and in his early years, he got into flying and became, and during World War II, he had this incredible career, stint as a contract pilot for the Royal Air Force, flying freshly built fighters and bombers from Canada to support the Royal Air Force war in Europe. And that was such a perilous, treacherous assignment that 500 of his colleagues perished in the process. So
wow.
he was heroic on a level that I had no idea going into this research.
Now, deal making is sort of at the core of his whole persona. So I'll talk a little bit about that. He's such a poker face guy with this sort of preternatural calm, right?
That's correct. He was called the Perry Como of the craps tables. And he was noted in the military for his poker face. The guys played cards all the time, and apparently you didn't want to play poker with Kirk.
Now,
but he brought that to the business world, too, a calm and a he didn't have a tell, I guess you say, when you're across the table from Kirk. In a business negotiation, you just never know for sure what's going through his head.
I was also impressed as part of his deal-making composite, how fair he was. He was not a guy that looked I keep thinking of Trump when I compare the two, because they were both in casinos and stuff. And for Trump, winning was everything. Humiliating the other guy was everything. And integrity was everything with Kerkorian. And they seem like almost opposites in many ways. Plus, Trump obviously such a public guy.
They were polar opposites in just about every respect, in both manner and temperament and goals. Kirk carried no grudges. He considered business a sport, but it wasn't to be humiliating your rival. For Kirk, a good deal was a deal that everybody won what they want. You know, everybody was a winner in a good deal. There didn't have to be a loser. You see that in some of the big deals that he had, for instance, with Ted Turner, who bought MGM from Kirk in the mid '80s. Ted Turner came out of that with a huge load of debt, and the kind of debt that made him vulnerable to collapse. And Kirk could have owned everything in Ted Turner's empire. He could have had, as Ted Turner was concerned about, that he was going to have, that CNN was going to end up being KNN for Kerkorian Network News. And Kirk could have done that. He had the edge and the authority, the contract clout to take and dismember the Turner Empire and take it into his own realm. But he didn't want to do that. He didn't want to squash Ted Turner. And even though his lawyers and financial people were prepared to help him do it, Kirk made a point of renegotiating. He did that with Steve Wynn in the Mirage deal. So this was a man who could have been a ruthless negotiator, and instead was a more of a partner with the people that he did business with.
I was stunned by that, both the Ted Turner deal and that not only did he do that deal with Steve Wynn, but he didn't put a non-compete on Steve Wynn just because he didn't feel that was fair, which is kind of mind-boggling since Wynn is such a brand, it's a brand name.
Yeah, and it was a combination of that and the fact that Kirk truly believed in something called competition. He thought competition was good for him as well as for the other guy, and he encouraged it. Having Steve Wynn build another hotel across the street from the Bellagio was a good idea, not a bad one. Kirk relished the competition. He relished competition from the tennis courts to the boardrooms.
Yeah. Well, that's a good segue into someone that didn't like competition as much. Talk about Howard Hughes and the differences between him and Kerkorian, because they both seem eccentric recluses from the outside.
Yeah, it's a false comparison, but it's inevitable, and Kirk hated the comparison personally. But Howard Hughes was a drug addict and a recluse to the degree that he was appeared unhinged. Kirk had a very healthy social life and was not a recluse, but he was private, and to that degree they were similar. But Howard Hughes was when came to Las Vegas in a major way in investing in casinos. At about the same time, Kirk built his first casino, a hotel. And Kirk's project was the International Hotel, the biggest hotel in the world at the time. And Howard was behind the scenes trying to do everything he could to prevent Kirk from building, because as far as Howard Hughes was concerned, Las Vegas wasn't big enough for the, for two giants. And that's how he perceived Kirk. So he was putting out the word to the bankers, don't help this guy or you'll never have my business. And he's putting out, he was trying to offer incentives for Kirk to pull up stakes and bail out. The Atomic Energy Commission's nuclear testing off outside of Las Vegas was a source of concern for Howard Hughes, who tried to use it to, again, scare Kirk off from investing heavily in Las Vegas in the early days. But Kirk, through it all, was unaware, first of all, that Howard was trying to submarine him that way, because as far as Kirk was concerned, he and Howard had a lot in common. But he found out later that that Howard Hughes was a major force trying to intercept and discredit his investments even before he could do them.
As we finish up in the last couple of 30 seconds or so of this segment, was he naive? He seemed, throughout this book, you see a theme of he's trusting, or he's thinking that he's the guy on the other side of the table, that they're together, et cetera.
Well, I think there was an element of naivete, but if you assumed that he didn't understand what was going on, you'd make a big mistake.
We'll be right back. This is Business Talk with Jim Campbell over the Biz Talk Radio Network, 350 stations around the country. Go to biztalkradio.com, find the one closest to you, listen over the Internet. More on Kirk Kerkorian coming your way next.
There's no question you need omega-3s. But which form should you take? Fish oil or krill oil? Scientists have debated this for years. Luckily, there's a new solution to satisfy everyone. It's called Krill Omega 50 Plus. It combines ultra-pure fish oil and joint-soothing krill oil together in just one tiny pill. It's so powerful, it can promote the health of your heart and your arteries. And if that wasn't enough, it can also boost your joint comfort in just days. We're so sure Krill Omega 50 Plus will work for you, we'll even send you a free bottle to put to the test. The debate is over. It's not fish oil or krill oil. It's both. And now it's free. Just pay $4.95 for shipping and claim your free bottle. Call now.
800-834-4690. 800-834-4690. That's 800-834-4690.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-569-3414. That's 800-569-3414. Again, 800-569-3414.
Greece is cheap.
But the airfare costs a fortune.
Paris?
Not much closer, and again, airfare...
What about Puerto Vallarta?
Let's face it, flying anywhere is just too expensive.
Wait, what's this? Low-cost airlines.
With one call to low-cost airlines, you'll drastically slash your travel costs. We're talking insanely low airline prices to any of your favorite destinations. Where would you like to go? London, Rome, Costa Rica, Australia?
Wow, that's cheap.
So why wait? Call now to learn how crazy cheap it is to fly anywhere in the U.S. or international. Our prices are so low, we can't publish them. The only way to get them is to call to instantly hear the most amazing best deals on airlines. Travel. It's that easy. So call now and start packing.
800-217-5107. 800-217-5107. 800-217-5107.
That's 800-217-5107.
I live alone and rarely have visitors. So when I slipped and fell in the kitchen last month and couldn't get to a phone, I knew I was in trouble.
Help!
I could barely move.
Help!
I tried calling for help, but no one could hear me. As I lay there, I couldn't help but think of my kids and grandkids having to go on without me. I was terrified. It took 8 hours for my neighbor to find me. It could have been the end of me. That's when I knew I needed Life Alert. With just one press of this button, I'm connected to the Life Alert Center, where I can get the help I need, even when I cannot reach a phone. With Life Alert, I'm never alone.
Call 1-800-414-1958 for your free Life Alert brochure. That's 1-800-414-1958. 1-800-414-1958. Call for your free Life Alert brochure today at 1-800-414-1958.
Biz Talk Radio.
And we're back with longtime investigative journalist William Rempel. And we're going to get into a little bit of the, more on the backstory of Kirk, but I wanted to finish off on some of his characteristics that really stick out. And this is another one that's different than Hughes. Talk about what a visionary he was, this whole leisure industry vision, et cetera.
Yeah, well, his original investments, after he had made his first fortune, which he made selling his long-nursed-along charter airline, he pocketed something in the neighborhood of $150 to $200 million, and he pocketed for about 2 seconds, and he turned around and put it in play, gambling on purchases of MGM, a struggling at the time film company, Western Airlines, which was a regional carrier, and building the International Hotel in Las Vegas, which he started with the funds he had for construction that did not include funds to finish it. So he had put so here he had these three things underway, and that was a gamble. Each one of them was.
The anxiety issue, the social anxiety issue. I don't know whether it was OCD or whatever. Can you sort of explain what that is, or in relation to him?
Well, he was petrified of speaking in public. That would nothing would scare him more than that. And I think it goes back to the fact that he was an eighth grade dropout from school, and he never had confidence that he had the education or the command of the language that he needed to sound educated. He was a man who was self-taught, and he was a very able aviator, and that required some great math skills. But he was never confident of his speaking, or his language, or his smarts, for that matter, which was surprising since he was such a brilliant visionary who saw all these different things that he could do.
It is, and you think those of us on the outside, no one looked at him as uneducated or anything like that.
No, exactly. Exactly. This was an insecurity that he carried into his entire life.
He also had, I like this one, Tom, a real on-time fanaticism, but he carried only, like, what did you say, the face of a Timex?
That's right. He didn't have, you know, he took it off the strap and just put the face in his pocket and carried it along. And it wasn't like he checked it constantly. He would ask people what time it was who were with him. And, you know, so it was an odd thing. But he was someone who, if you were on time, you were late already. He expected people to be early. And he expected to be early himself. And so his people always knew that when they had a departure at the time of noon, you were going to be there and ready to go at 11:30 at least, if not sooner.
Sound like Tom Coughlin here in New York, the Giants head coach.
Yeah, well, there you go.
He even set the clocks ahead in the Now, one other thing that I think we need to discuss is his charitable giving, incredibly generous and anonymously.
Yes. He was like the old TV show The Millionaire. He would give he gave generously to lots of causes, but everyone with a caveat: you can't tell anybody that I did this, or you'll never get another dime. And so everybody was very careful to protect his anonymity. This continued for much of his career until the late 80s, when he formed his charity, his charitable trust, the Lindsay Foundation. And he did that because he wanted to be more open about helping the Armenians that after a major earthquake devastated the country. And he had given anonymously to some Armenian causes, but no one knew it. And there were actually complaints in the Armenian press that this richest man of Armenian background was doing nothing, when actually he'd been giving millions of dollars already.
And I think you say in the book he gave $1.5 billion away over his lifetime.
Exactly. And then when he died, he left the $2 billion that was in his pocket when he died, and left that to charity, too.
How did he get the mob out of Vegas, or he didn't work with the mob, or what?
Well, the mob built Vegas. So remember, traditional banks did not make loans to casinos in back in the 50s and 60s, when in 40s, 50s, 60s, when Las Vegas was built and booming originally. And so when Howard Hughes came to town and Kirk Kerkorian, they came with their own funds. They didn't need the mob. Like the others did. The Teamsters Central States Pension Fund that had financed the construction of casinos from Bugsy Siegel to Meyer Lansky's days, and all through that period, those people were building Las Vegas with mob money. All of a sudden, the skim wasn't appropriate. Stockholders were the new bosses of Las Vegas, and that's because of Kirk and Howard.
I want to ask you some of the folks that he dealt with over time. First off, the deal he did with Elvis is pretty stunning back in the day.
Yeah, Elvis was one of when he opened the International Hotel, the biggest hotel in the world at the time. It opened with Barbra Streisand and then Elvis Presley back to back, and it turned out to be great for Barbra Streisand and Elvis Presley, as well as Kirk and the people that behind the International. In fact, you could say that every Elvis impersonator that's ever lived since then has to thank Kirk Kerkorian for the fact that even happened, that they exist.
You know, and this is an example of the other stuff, is that the amount of money he paid Elvis in that deal, I mean, was completely stunning. And there's a quote, I guess, of his in the book: the smaller the bet, the more you lose when you win.
That's
he did the
right.
same thing. He built these huge hotels that were a multiple of the rooms of the ones that were there that weren't doing well.
Exactly. And that's part of his visionary sense, is that he saw Las Vegas, the potential for Las Vegas to be huge, even when it was struggling at the time. And it was the same in the movie world and with MGM. He saw the outdated use of the back lot, for instance, and so he was willing to. He knew that he could sell that off and turn that into a really valuable real estate, instead of having to keep this warehouse in the back because nobody was using it except as storage. And he recognized the value of in the movie world, of that library of old movies, even before there was a cable television empire to take advantage of it, which was soon to come. But he was seeing that. He was seeing these things around the corner, and that was part of his genius.
We have 1 minute to go on this segment. Talk a little bit about the Agassi family and the impact he had eventually on Andre Agassi, right?
Yeah, well, Mike Agassi, who is Andre's father, was a waiter, a captain at the hotels and casinos of Las Vegas, and Kirk met him and discovered they were both had interests in boxing and tennis, and in fact, Mike Agassi gave Kirk some tennis lessons back in the day, so they became really good friends. And when Mike had Andre, when his wife had Andre, they gave him a middle name of Kirk. So Andre Kirk Agassi is a tribute to that friendship between Mike and Kirk Kerkorian.
Pretty cool. Listening to Business Talk with Jim Campbell, we'll look at some of the deals and the messy personal life in our third segment.
There's more than one way to invest in your education. Investing in the right products, securities, and real estate generates secure and sound futures. What about an investment that retains its value? Consider college real estate. College real estate can provide housing for students and generate returns for their families. Through this special offer from Austin iLabs, you can download the free workbook from collegerealestate.com to see if this investment is right for you. Go to collegerealestate.com/radio.
We paid less for our Craftmatic today than we did 20 years ago.
If you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and free information on today's Craftmatic adjustable beds. And then decide when you see how little they cost. Rated number one by consumers nationwide on ConsumerAffairs.com. Craftmatic beds come in all mattress types, including cool gel memory foam, for up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand. Enjoy temporary relief of low back pain, poor circulation, nighttime heartburn, mild arthritis. You'll sleep better in a Craftmatic adjustable bed. So if you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and information, and then decide when you see how little they cost. Discover Craftmatic for less, up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand.
Call 1-800-316-5271. That's 1-800-316-5271. 1-800-316-5271. Call now.
Do you have an idea for an invention or new product? Do you think companies would be interested in your idea? Do you want to try to get a patent? Then call InventHelp now. InventHelp keeps your idea confidential and explains every step of the invention process. Join the thousands of people just like you who chose InventHelp to pursue their idea. We are experienced. We are working for you. We are InventHelp. Get started with your idea. Call for free information.
Call 1-800-607-8945. That's 1-800-607-8945.
Got an old car? You can donate it, whether it's running or not, to the United Breast Cancer Foundation and save a life. They'll even come and pick it up for free. The United Breast Cancer Foundation has saved hundreds of women's lives through their free or low-cost breast screen exams. But now they need your help. The United Breast Cancer Foundation wants to save more lives through early detection by offering women free or low-cost breast screening exams. And donating your old car, SUV, or truck, whether it's running or not, helps pay for them. Plus, you get a charitable tax deduction. Help the United Breast Cancer Foundation save lives by donating your old car, SUV, or truck. Call now for free pickup. 800-245-0473. 800-245-0473. 800-245-0473. Call right now. That number again is 800-245-0473.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. That's 800-430-7570.
National Funding Group has just released $100 million in easy access small business funding to businesses that gross at least $100,000 a year. You can have fast access up to $500,000 in new business capital in as little as 48 hours. Think about the ways you could grow your business if you had up to $500,000 cash infusion. Call a NFG funding expert now. The process is easy. It only takes about 5 minutes. Then our management-owned lending team looks at your application for a fast approval. You can get 100% funded in about 2 days. If you need up to $500,000 in working capital to run your business and you gross at least $100,000 a year, call NFG and apply today. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. That's 800-296-1564.
Biz Talk Radio.
We're back with Bill Rumpel, the author of The Gambler, How Penniless Dropout Kirk Kerkorian Became the Greatest Dealmaker in Capitalist History. And we're talking deals that upended Hollywood, Las Vegas, and Detroit. We'll get to the Hollywood and Vegas. I want to jump to the cars just for a sec, because I found that the most fascinating, you know, when I got to know who this guy was. He took a run at Chrysler, I think twice, with Lee Iacocca on one of them at least, and then GM. Talk about the there, and why didn't he go all the way?
Well, he actually went after Chrysler. He wanted to take it private.
Yes.
And he and Lee Iacocca teamed up for that. And they expected, actually, perhaps naively, but they expected that the management would come along because it was such a good idea at the time financially. And this turned out to Kirk's surprise to have the management quite adamantly opposed. And in the aftermath, it seems that the opposition was primarily because the folks at Chrysler were unwilling to engage in any kind of deal with Lee Iacocca, who the management considered rivals to them. So that's why it didn't go. But Kirk, as usual, had other plan. When the plan wasn't working well, he had other tactics that he was to, because he was a man who always had multiple tactics in mind. And this one of the things about this one that was so amazing is that Kirk failed. It was a rare failure at that point for him, trying to take over a company. He usually was successful. But in failure, he ended up with a profit of $2.7 billion. And so I've always thought, well, when you fail and make $2.7 billion, that's a pretty amazing deal.
It's a pretty amazing deal. Did he feel, I mean, he would be charged with being a green mailer or a corporate raider, you know, taking the money and run. He didn't see himself that way, though.
No, absolutely not. He saw it as a huge disappointment.
Yeah.
Because had he succeeded, he knew that he would have made something on an order of $6 to $8 billion. And it would have been better for the company in his mind. So, in fact, he sued in federal court.
Yes,
against the Daimler-Benz folks that ended up taking control of Chrysler at the time, because he thought they did it under false pretenses, and he lost money. And
they did do it under false pretenses.
Well, they did, but the judge was not sympathetic when he saw how much Kirk had profited. He found it difficult to award him any kind of payments for lost theoretical loss income.
Now, what happened with General Motors? Because there again, he folded, but he also lost money here.
Yeah, well, actually, within General Motors, he made a little on that. It wasn't what he intended. It was Ford is one where he lost substantially with Ford. And in both cases, it was more timing than anything. With Ford, he was investing into the recession, and even then, his financial people thought that if he could have just hung on a little longer, if he had not bailed, he probably still would have come out ahead. But there's something about automobiles that really appealed to him. It was a throwback to his youth.
Yeah.
When he was he used to make a few dollars by refurbishing used cars steam cleaning the engines and things like that.
And used planes too.
And with planes it was a big deal.
Yeah.
I mean he probably kept his charter airline was kept afloat by timely sales and of junk airplanes. He was the Sanford and Sons of junk airplanes.
All right, let's go to Hollywood now. You know, the charge is always asset stripping, that, you know, he cut production, he sold off land, he sold all the artifacts off. I mean, the Wizard of Oz shoes, you know, Dorothy's shoes even. Did he see himself as a liquidator that way? And then the second part, why did he trade these things all the time instead of keeping them?
Well, he was not a man of, you know, keep in mind that he was a poor kid. He didn't have things. He grew up without things. He grew up moving all the time. Mm-hmm. And so he learned to value friends and family, not things, and did not accumulate things. So there's a certain lack of sentimentality, I'm sure, toward property. And he saw the back lot as a completely outdated, obsolete thing, and it was taking up space, and it was taking up costs. So that's what he saw. Now, Debbie Reynolds. He made Debbie Reynolds cry. That was she was such a fan of the iconic elements of Hollywood that she tried to save herself. And it's, you know, it made him the most hated man in Hollywood, no question about it. But he saw it as a cost, not a benefit. And the benefits he saw were the artistic work, the films themselves, and the real estate.
And he kept selling the stuff. He kept buying the stuff for a good price and then selling it back to the same people at a lower price.
That's right. Yeah. With Ted Turner, he sold him everything and then kept buying back pieces. So he ended up owning it again. Anyway, he bought and sold it three different times, every time for a profit. And I think it was after the last sale when he sold it to Sony. Is when the New York Times called him the god of all deal makers.
All right, let's move a little bit to the personal life. I mean, he seemed like such a man of integrity and quiet certitude, and ends up with all these sort of disaster things. I guess talk about the fake paternity Lisa Bonder first.
Yeah, well, in this case, he was always, his private life was very private. He would be noted when he went out in public with various starlets and friends and lovers, and they would make the social columns or the gossip columns, but there was never any controversy, never any scandal, and until the Lisa Bonder, who was a tennis professional for a while, she falsified a DNA test to make her baby appear to be Kirk, the father of her baby, a little girl.
Jeez.
And she did this by using one of Kirk's his only biological daughter, getting essentially talking this daughter into sharing a saliva test under false premises, false purposes. Anyway, she took him to court to get more support for this baby that wasn't his. And it ended up becoming the fodder for scandal in the tabloid.
And interestingly, he didn't mind supporting the kid. It was his privacy that he was bothered. And she was incredibly greedy, right? I mean, she wanted at one point $1 million a year or a month or something.
A month,
yeah.
Yeah. He was paying $50,000 a month at the time. And no, he didn't mind. He actually accepted legal paternity. I mean, he actually signed a document that accepted paternity, even though he knew he wasn't the father. And he promised that he would take care of this little girl and for the rest of her life. And this was okay to him because it was money. As only a billionaire can say, if a problem can be solved with money, it's not a problem. So he accepted that in the case of this child, that he would take care of her, treat her as his own daughter, and provide the monthly support that was extraordinary by most of our standards. But what happened then is that the mother, Lisa, filed for more support, increased support for incredible sums, and she did it in open court as opposed to family court, where it became a public case, and that cost Kirk the one thing that he cared for the most, and that was privacy.
That's what hit me the most, is that he didn't mind paying these ridiculous sums to this woman that was basically blackmailing him, but he couldn't deal with the loss of privacy. When he divorced, I think, his first wife, Peggy, he goes into deep depression and even has electroshock therapy. Right?
Yeah, his romantic life was had its ups and downs, that's for sure, and because he was very devoted to the first wife, by all accounts. And his second wife, Jean, they were married for nearly 30 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, he didn't have the scandalous lifestyle. It was, he was a billionaire who was very popular. He was very good looking and fit, physically fit, right up until his 90s.
I was impressed. Yeah, he was actually playing tennis, and he was upset that his body was slowing down at 90. The first time he said he noticed, I'm 60 and I'm trying to figure it out.
Ditto.
You're listening to Business Talk with Jim Campbell. You can see our YouTube version. Go to search Business Talk with Jim Campbell or go to Park City Productions 06604. We'll talk lessons from Kirk in our final national segment.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-521-9579 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-521-9579 to take your call right now. Call 1-800-521-9579. That's 1-800-521-9579. Again, 1-800-521-9579.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right. General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370. 800-605-5370. Call 800-605-5370.
If you're suffering from hearing loss, stay tuned for a special offer from the makers of Listen Clear, a revolutionary hearing aid breakthrough designed by top audio engineers to fit your ear almost invisibly. Right now, you can try Listen Clear hearing aids absolutely free for 45 days. You can also qualify for free shipping and free batteries for life. Listen Clear hearing aids are so lightweight and comfortable, you can wear them all day long. They're practically invisible too, so others won't even notice you're wearing them. And the best part is, you'll be able to hear almost everything, everywhere. So do something about your hearing loss. Call Listen Clear now to get started with your 45-day risk-free hearing aid trial. This special offer won't be available for long, so call Listen Clear now.
800-716-4650. 800-716-4650. 800-716-4650. We're here 24 hours a day to help. That's 800-716-4650.
This is an urgent health notice for all residents suffering from back, neck, knee, and wrist pain. You may qualify for a pain-relieving brace at little or no cost to you, but the deadline is fast approaching. Simply call the Health Alert Hotline now.
You heard right. You may qualify for a pain-relieving back, neck, knee, or wrist brace. These items may even be covered by Medicare or your private insurance. The Health Alert Hotline is your brace company. These specialized braces have been tested for pain relief. Call us toll-free right now to determine your eligibility and to learn how to use your private insurance or Medicare to minimize your out-of-pocket cost. Don't wait. If the deadline passes, you may lose your opportunity to get a pain-relieving back, neck, knee, or wrist brace at little or no cost to you.
800-306-1760. 800-306-1760. 800-306-1760. That's 800-306-1760.
Are you ready to leave your corporate job behind and be your own boss? Have you ever dreamed of owning a business? Do you have $50,000 or more sitting around in a 401k? If you answered yes, it's time to invest in yourself by buying or starting a business or franchise. IRS code allows you to use money in a 401k to invest in a business with absolutely no penalties or taxes. At Guidant Financial, we've helped more than 11,000 entrepreneurs invest $3 billion in retirement assets into the small businesses and franchises of their dreams. So if you've got $50,000 or more in a 401k and you're looking for a way to start a business, call Guidant Financial now for free information and to learn more. Operators are standing by for your call. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. That's 800-570-6630.
Biz Talk Radio.
Our guest is the author of a new book on dealmaker Kirk Kerkorian. That's Bill Rempel. And before we get into messages, tell us what his net worth ended up. Because I was stunned. He had this huge project in Vegas that got hit by the 08 crash, and he lost a huge chunk of his wealth.
Yeah, I think he lost something like, I don't know, $15 billion, and he was still a billionaire.
He still had $3 billion left, apparently.
That's pretty close, yeah.
All right, let's talk about some of the messages that I took away. What he put importance on failure. What does that mean?
Well, his failure is what I think, and it was his early days of failure. The failure being his family's difficulties. They were being evicted, not just from the ranch, but they couldn't pay the rent in the houses when they moved to L.A. So Kirk was constantly having to move and be the new kid in school, the new neighborhoods, new friends. And that experience of losing and failing, even if it's not him personally, but the fact that you have nothing and have all this uncertainty, gave him a certain sort of comfort with risk. And how bad can it be? You know, when you're on the verge of homeless so many times in his life. So I think those experiences of failure gave him comfort in making risky moves all through his career.
How do you explain how he got what his philosophy or his comfort with risk and uncertainty and taking big risks, but they were calculated risks? He wasn't a gambler in the sense that he was just throwing money on the table.
No, that's right. He except occasionally, but his risks were calculated. In Vegas, he calculated the odds. He understood the odds very well. And craps was his favorite game because he knew how to play it. In business, he did his homework. The man did not rely on MBAs and investments reports, any of that. He did his own homework, and he knew what he was after and knew what potentials were on his own. And so preparedness before taking an investment risk was extraordinary.
I like, by the way, there's a story in the book where Bear Stearns comes in and says, we prepared this huge analysis on whatever he was doing, and Kirk said, great, could you just keep it?
Yeah.
He didn't want to hear it.
Yeah. Well, in fact, the fellow that prepared that complained to his boss that Kirk, he doesn't listen to me. I tried to give him some advice, and the boss said, never tell Babe Ruth how to hold the bat.
That's Ace Greenberg, right?
That's right.
The legendary guy.
Yes.
Another big thing, I think, is his whole deal, your word is your bond. He didn't even need contracts.
Exactly. In fact, he would sometimes say, don't let the lawyers screw this up. Because when he shook your hand, you had a deal. The deal was whatever you had agreed on, and everybody knew it. And all through his life, unlike his father, who had gotten overextended and defaulted on lots of loans, Kirk never did. He he considered protecting his reputation one of the main things of life he had to do. And he was so careful from the earliest days at protecting his reputation and his credit that he never had a problem getting a loan. This was in the tens of millions of dollars on his signature, even in the early days before he was a billionaire.
Do you think it's important, the component that he's really an immigrant success story in this period that we're in right now, which he's, you know, sort of leaning anti-immigrant?
Oh, yeah. Kirk's family could not have come into this country today if they were poor, they were illiterate, they were unskilled. These were not the kind of immigrants that the anti-immigrant crowd is looking for. They did not have special skills of any kind, and so had they been denied entry, there would be no Kirk Kerkorian, and that would have been one of the biggest losses in business in our country.
Interesting. How do you explain his competitive nature? That, you know, that tennis until he was 90, and never backed down, but yet he was so fair.
Yeah, well, he loved competition. It comes back to that, and he loved fair competition. And he did it in an early age. He was a boxer, an amateur boxer. He got the nickname Rifle Right Kerkorian after one of his early victories. And he loved boxing. And he always and tennis became his next love, which he took up when he was like 50 years old. But he loved the competition, and he played it competitively. In his backyard, and he played it competitively on the senior circuit. When he was in his 80s, he was a ranked player on the senior circuit.
Do you think, I think in this Donald Trump time that we're in, that we would probably benefit from more humility and less hubris?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Well, that would be Kirk's
yeah.
advice, I'm sure.
Exactly.
I mean, one of the things that was typical of Kirk is he would not talk about himself. When somebody would ask him his advice for how to be successful, he refused to answer. He would say, "I don't know. I can't tell you how to do it." But it was all humility and lack of ego. He was proud of what he accomplished. He really was. But he wouldn't even talk about that except in the privacy of his family and friends. To say that he was a polar opposite of Donald Trump is to understate it. He also hated to fire people. Kirk did. I mean, so much for the apprentice.
Yeah, he wouldn't have quite made it on there. It always impressed me. He gave hundreds of millions of dollars for the Armenian genocide and the earthquake, and he wouldn't even allow a bench to be named after him.
That's right. No, he didn't want any kind of celebrity, any kind of of tribute. He didn't even like dinner parties in his honor. And you'll notice in Las Vegas, where Kirk owned most of the largest hotels over time, his name is not on any of them.
Yeah.
And you know, he didn't even put his name on his parking spot at MGM. So he didn't do that.
And just like Trump, right? Trump doesn't have his name on any buildings, does he?
Oh, no, not only in, you know, 20-foot letters.
Yes. You know, I like the humble man sort of summary, or this is a great line for it that's in the book. He took the risks, but not the credit.
That's right, and that's what his people saw, and that's why the loyalty of Kirk's people was extraordinary. He didn't have to demand loyalty; he commanded it with living a life that shared the credit and took good care of people who were loyal to him, and it was a mutual affection society.
Well, I tell you, I learned a lot in this book, Bill. Really enjoyable. He seems a tremendous human being. The book is The Gambler, How Penniless Dropout Kirk Kerkorian Became the Greatest Dealmaker in Capitalist History. This has been Business Talk with Jim Campbell. Get our podcast at iTunes, biztalkradio.com, on YouTube. Cork City Productions, 06604. Thanks to William Rempel. Thanks to our national audience for listening. We'll see everybody next Sunday on Business Talk with Jim Campbell.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com.
Biz Talk Radio.